Welcome back to another episode of Pilcrow and Dagger the Shorts. My name is Amarie Silver, and I'll be joining you today as we listen to Sunshine by Henry Simpson. But first, an announcement. Submissions for the January issue are now closed. We are currently accepting submissions for the February-March issue. The theme for this issue is Workplace Wars. Do you have an evil boss? Are you the victim of break room gossip? Has someone been stealing your pens? If so, tell us all about it. The deadline for this issue is January 10th, 2019. And now I proudly present Sunshine by Henry Simpson. Sunshine Extended Care stood alone on a treeless mesa, about a mile from the fence along the U.S.-Mexico border. In a grassy compound, surrounded by a high brownish wall matching the parched landscape, it resembled an exclusive country club, with a two-story main building topped by a tile roof hinting Mexico. It was a surprisingly upscale nursing home in the middle of nowhere. I parked on the side of the road in a position of overwatch and could see all along the border fence and inside most of the compound. Now late afternoon, I had been on the road since 8 a.m. and driven almost 400 miles. I was ready for a rest, seriously tempted to stay the night at a motel and return tomorrow. But first, a closer look. I drove slowly past the main building, continued on the road for another 100 yards, circled back, and stopped at the entry gate. The uniformed guard glanced at the Porsche and waved me through. I followed a paved road along the inside edge of the compound and glimpsed a swimming pool, tennis courts, a large recreation area, and some smaller buildings. Halfway back, I turned left, crossing the parking lot separating the main structure from the cottages. There, I spotted an old two-door sedan and stopped for a better look. A Ford Torino, red. I recognized the general shape, but could not tell the year or much else about it, except it showed its age in the ripples along its body, missing trim and uneven paint job. I wrote down the license number. As I looked up before moving forward, I noticed a big man standing in the lot, watching me. I moved on, parking in front of the main building. It had a wide entrance with automatic sliding doors suitable for wheelchairs. Inside, it was clean, well-carpeted, and had a pleasant, fruity aroma. I followed a sign to the office, into a quiet waiting room with windowed walls and comfortable furniture. A moment later, an attractive blonde appeared. She was about 40 and appeared healthy, lean, and fit in a white tennis outfit and displayed the set smile of a TV personality. "Hello," she said in a pleasant voice. "May I be of help?" "Perhaps you can," I said softly, which seemed the right volume for a rich twit. "My name is Alfred Winston. I thought I'd drop by to check you out in person." I giggled. "I don't mean you, actually, you personally or anything like that. I'm referring to this establishment. It's for my uncle, you see. He's been having problems with his seniority." "Ah, yes. You're doing research. Very prudent. Well, if you're considering Sunshine, I'll be happy to tell you all about it. My name is Lynn Hunsaker. I'm the director here. Please, call me Lynn." "My friends call me Davy. You can call me Davy." "Not Winnie. Definitely not Winnie," I giggled. "Play a lot of tennis, do you?" "Whenever I can find the time." "Would you like to come back to my office?" "Why not?" I said with a big smile. She turned and led me down a short corridor into a large office with windowed walls, soothing lithographs of desert landscapes and ample seating for a dozen people. "Nice office," I said, looking around. She guided me to a tan leather divan and sat opposite to me on its twin. "Is that your Porsche I saw out there? We don't get many of those around here." "It's mine. Most definitely mine. Old but reliable. Not yet in the way." "May I ask? How did you learn about Sunshine?" "From my Aunt Abigail. Abby did all the research. I know very little, actually. Let me be honest. She sent me here to take a first-hand look, up close and personal. She knows you're very upscale, have a nice enclosed facility, and are out here in the country, a long ways from certain distractions. May I ask, Davy? Perhaps you could tell me a little bit more about your uncle. Well, now, that's really complicated. I'll do the best I can with it. He's a very smart man, very intelligent, and very bright. He's 74. In his younger years, he traveled a great deal. You should see his den. Also creative, he does watercolors and plays the electric guitar. At least he used to play the electric guitar. I haven't heard him play in quite a while. Perhaps it blew a fuse or he lost interest or... And he went to Yale for 3 years. Still gets the alumni magazine. That's so interesting, Davy. How's he doing these days? For example, right now, today. Not at all well. He seems confused most of the time. What day is it? Where am I? What did I do yesterday? Where did I park the Mercedes? Did I pay the gas bill? Did I deposit the check? That sort of thing. What's his doctor say? Senile dementia. That can be serious. However, many of our guests have the same condition. We help them enjoy life to the fullest in a safe and structured environment. The walls must help. They reduce aimless wandering. Does Mr. Winston have that habit? Most definitely. Fortunately, we live in Coronado, so he can't wander far, but it does cause problems for the family. I know exactly what you're talking about, Davy. I can assure you that once he's settled in here, your problems with that will end. Very good, Lynn. This sounds promising. Perhaps you could give me a little more background information. It helps those of us in the caring profession to know about our guests. Certainly. Ask away. What was Mr. Winston's profession? He's retired. I mean, before he retired. What did he do then? He kept busy. Social events, his club, travel, board meetings, investments. Family money, you see. He never had to go into an office to earn a paycheck or anything like that. If you don't mind my asking, Davy, what do you do? I help out the family. I suppose you could say I'm an advisor, something general like that. Though the fact is, I don't know the details of anything specific in particular. I studied architecture, so I have a sound aesthetic sense. Ask me about wallpaper or interior design, and I'll give you good advice. Fortunately, I have a trust fund. Do you also live in Coronado? I do, with the rest of the family. We have a big house, a mansion actually, on a tiny little island. Now isn't that a scream? She chuckled. How would you like to take a look around? That sounds like fun. I'd really like to do that, but it's getting late. I had a hard time finding this place. It's so far out in the boondocks. I must have spent hours driving around and all the illegals running across the road and the border patrol vehicles racing everywhere. We could put you up here in one of our excellent cottages. They're used by relatives and friends visiting permanent guests. There's a small charge, of course, about the same as one of the local motels, but our accommodations are infinitely superior. Is there a restaurant? Absolutely. We have a fine dining room. You can order off the menu. You're really tempting me, Lynn. Come along then, Davy. I'll show you around. Decide afterward if you want to stay overnight. She stood. I followed. We boarded a golf cart and rode through the compound. Lynn pointed out visitor and guest quarters, an apartment block for employees, a long-term care building, and a recreational area that included a pool, various courts, picnic area, and recreation room. Guests were everywhere we went, some immobile, others transporting themselves in golf carts, on foot, in wheelchairs, or with walkers. Everywhere were young Mexicans working as gardeners, attendants, groundskeepers, and at other service jobs. Are you impressed? Lynn said as we stopped at one of the cottages. Very much so, I said. You seem to have everything here except a liquor store. We do our best. She stepped out of the cart, walked to the cottage door, inserted a key card into the lock, and opened the door. I followed her inside. It was the size of a small motel room with Scandinavian modern furnishings and wall decorations. This is yours if you'd like to spend the night. How much do you charge? Are you serious about your uncle? I try to be serious about everything in life, Lynn. For a moment, doubt crossed her face, soon erased by her perpetual smile. The first night's on the house, Davy. Sunshine will also buy you dinner and breakfast. How very generous, Lynn. You've talked me into staying. She handed me a key card. This is for the door. Settle in and make yourself at home. Would you like to have dinner with me? I'd absolutely love it. Meet me in the dining room at 6:15. She smiled and left. I wondered, watching her go, if she smiled in her sleep. Exhausted from the long day of travel, I felt like sleeping, but with only an hour before dinner, lacked time. The cottage had a small kitchen and a few supplies. I brewed coffee, downed a quick cup, and called Lena on my cell. "Where the hell are you?" she said. "San Isidro," I said. "You did it? I think I've located Ricky Craven's car. Can you check a license number?" "Give it to me." Minutes later, she called back. "It's a 1969 Ford Torino, registered to Catherine Bash in Victorville." "That's in California." "I know Victorville. I was just there. Talked to Mr. Bash's husband. His missus ran off with alias Lloyd Love." "Have you located Craven?" "I think so, but I'm still working on it." "What's in San Isidro?" "One of Craven's pen pals. I'm investigating." "Investigating? You're off the goddamn grid, Joe. You're alone. You'll get in trouble out there and I won't be able to help you." "I have to hang up now, Lena. I've got a hot dinner date." She laughed. "Should I come? I could catch a flight, get there by tomorrow morning." She hesitated. "If you need me, I mean." "Thanks, but no, Lena. I don't know what you'd do if you came here. If all goes well, I'll be out of here early tomorrow." "Keep in touch, Joe. I worry about you, that reckless streak." "What a sweet thing to say, Lena. I worry about you, too." "Like hell you do. Bye." I took a quick shower and changed my clothes. In the few minutes left before my dinner date, I reviewed the photos of Ricky Craven and Kay Bash. Craven had piercing dark eyes, longish hair, narrow mouth, and a broad nose. An intimidating countenance. His most distinctive feature was his thick black beard. He was on the run and might have shaved it off or restyled to change his appearance. I tried to envision his face without it. Kay Bash could not do much to change her appearance, except restyle and color her hair. The dining room reminded me of one of those senior places with homestyle cooking. It smelled like a cafeteria and had a buffet. Most of the patrons were serving themselves, few from the menu. The patrons were mainly sunshine guests, but a cluster of workers in blue uniforms sat together. Lynn waved from a table in the center of the dining room. She had changed from her tennis outfit into a light blue dress and was alone. I joined her. The menu contained country fried steak, several chicken dishes, tuna casserole, shrimp, spaghetti, pork chops, burgers, and a San Isidro Mexican plate. I laid the menu down. "Hearty fare," I said. "I'm having a salad," Lynn said. "We have an excellent salad bar." I followed her, but she kept stopping at tables to chat, so I continued alone. I navigated the salad bar and took a return route past the cluster of blue uniforms, looking for reddish hair, or failing that, the attractive face I had tried to memorize earlier. No luck. Back at the table, I noticed a large man pushing a busboy cart. He was Caucasian, about 30, with short black hair and a ragged goatee. The first non-Mexican service worker I had seen at Sunshine. I sorted my salad, watching Lynn work the room like a political. I lost interest until I noticed her standing beside the busboy, talking intently. She seemed to morph from director to vulnerable girl. Her hips rocked, lips quivered, and dinner tray tottered until the busboy touched her hand and she pulled back, raised her tray, and left him. His eyes followed her back to the table, and as she sat, he glared at me. It might have been my imagination working through the exhaustion, but the perception made me blink. "You must know everyone in this room," I said admiringly. Lynn looked up with her forever smile. "I believe I do. It's my job to know everyone and everything that goes on." "All those names and faces. That must be terribly difficult. I could never do that, not in 1,000 years. She looked at me with pity. Leaving the right impression is important in undercover work. Employee-only signs marked both ends of the apartments behind the guest cottages. I stopped a young Latina in a blue uniform and showed her the picture of Kay Bash. "Have you seen her?" I said. She shook her head, gave me a worried look, and went on her way. After 3 tries, I got a room number on the opposite side of the building. I walked around and found it. Parked nearby was the red Torino. Craven probably shared the apartment with Kay, but was bussing tables and would be at it for a while. I knocked at the door. A woman with billowing reddish hair opened it. She was in her early 40s with attractive features eclipsed by fatigue. It took a moment to match her face with her photo. Sunshine Extended Care had not been kind to her. "You're Kay?" I said. "I can't talk to guests or visitors," she said. "I'm here to help you." "I don't need help, mister. Go away or I'll call security." "You look like hell. This place is ruining you." She recoiled as if slapped in the face. "Who the hell are you?" "Think of me as a peacemaker. I repair fractured relationships." "Did Ned send you?" "He asked me to tell you he still loves you. All is forgiven. He wants you back home." "If security spots you there, we'll both get in trouble." "I'm harmless." She grabbed my wrist, pulled me inside, and shut the door. "What's your name?"
"Joe."
"Lloyd may come back. He usually gets off at 8. What will you do if he's early?"
"Are you afraid of him?"
"Aren't you?"
"He's a big man with a small brain."
She laughed nervously.
"Not funny."
"Your fear shows, Kay. I love him."
"Battered women say that."
"Who says I'm battered?"
"Maybe your work's to blame."
"My work's rewarding. I care for helpless elders."
"How's the pay?"
"Lousy. Learning Spanish?"
"I can't leave here. Security won't let me out the gate without a pass."
"That's against the law."
"What do you know about the law?"
"Everything. Listen, Kay, I can get you out and take you home."
"What about Lloyd?"
"We won't ask his permission."
"Do you think he'll just let me go? He'll come after me and there'll be hell to pay."
"He won't follow you. I guarantee it."
"You're crazy." She stared at me.
"You're not afraid, are you?"
"Not very."
She looked up at the wall clock. "It's almost 8. You have to leave here now." She pushed me back to the door. "Come back at 10:30. If Lloyd's not here, I'll open the door."
"I can do that."
She pushed me out the door. I circled the apartments and waited in the shadows, a safe distance from Kay's front door. Shortly after 8 o'clock, a big man in a blue service uniform entered the apartment. I returned to my room. Shortly before 10:30, I returned and found the back door cracked open. I entered, closing it behind. Kay was standing in the kitchen a few feet away, looking at me.
"Hello again," I said. "Where's Lloyd?"
"He's at Lynn's. He usually spends the night there."
"Uh-huh.
I don't care anymore. You said you could get me out of here. Let's go."
"Sure. We'll leave in a few minutes. I didn't come here just for you. I'm also a debt collector. I need to find the items Lloyd stole from my client."
"I didn't steal anything from Ned. The money I took was my share of community property."
"I don't care about that. This is for a different client."
"How many people do you work for?"
"Many."
"You talk like a con man. Is that what you are? Did you mean it when you said you'd get me out of here?"
"I meant every word. Now settle down. We'll leave as soon as I've searched this place and found what I'm looking for."
"Where would Lloyd hide his valuables?"
"In his car. It's the only place security can't get into."
"Where are his car keys?"
"Not here. He must have them."
"We're leaving in 10 minutes. Pack your stuff." I spent the next 10 minutes searching the tiny apartment. I found nothing until I looked in the crawl space above the bathroom. There sat a cigar box containing a trove of pen pal letters, with both sides of the correspondence between Love and Mary Butts, Kay Bash, and Lynn Hunsaker. Beneath the letters was a key to a storage locker in Hemet. Kay was waiting in the living room.
"What's that?" she said.
"Nothing important. Are you packed?"
"I don't want anything here." I moved toward the door. "I'll be right back."
"Where are you going?"
"To my car."
"Don't leave me, Joe."
She sounded terrified.
"I'm not leaving. I'll be right back. Let me come with you."
I grabbed her hand, pulled her to her feet, opened the front door, and took a quick look around.
"All clear." We stepped into the darkness.
Minutes later, we returned in the Porsche with a cigar box under my seat. I backed in beside the Torino and killed the engine.
"Sit tight, Kay. This won't take long."
She looked at me with wide eyes. I should have got her drunk.
I opened the hood of the Porsche and pulled out the toolbox I had received from a former client in lieu of payment. I took out the slide hammer and forced the Torino's trunk lock. As soon as the trunk popped, the car alarm erupted. I pointed a pocket flashlight inside. Spare tire, bumper jack, toolbox, automotive supplies, canvas overnight bag, and two 7.62mm military ammo cans.
Inside the bag were athletic shoes and clothes, a pack of box cutters and razor blades, an M1911 Colt 45 semi-automatic pistol, and a box of 45 caliber ammunition. One of the ammo cans contained a small roll of currency, the other a yellow belt slotted with gold sovereigns. I was about to check the inside of the car when I saw the headlights of a golf car coming at me and noticed people standing outside their apartments, witnessing the car burglary in progress. The cart slowed to a stop behind the Torino. The young man at its tiller was wearing a black security guard uniform and speaking into a walkie-talkie. He stepped out of his cart. His swagger reminded me of Corporal Wood, who had complicated my arrest in a recent traffic stop. I could see his mind working as he shined his flashlight in my face, eyed the open trunk of the Torino, heard the car alarm, and drew the logical conclusion. He pulled a pair of cuffs from his leather belt and came toward me. "What's going on here?" "Lloyd's car alarm went off. I'm trying to shut it down." "I'm not stupid, mister. You're breaking into that car." "I don't think you're stupid, sir. Appearances can be deceiving." "The sign says employees only. What are you doing here?" "Visiting. I'm taking you into custody. Hold out your hands." I pulled out my stun gun and zapped him in the chest. He collapsed. I cuffed him to his cart. He looked up at me with an expression of disbelief, his lips moving in silent speech. "You need more training," I said. "Perhaps a career change." The car alarm stopped. I started to turn and instantly felt a hard blow against my back that threw me to the ground. Breathless and immobile, behind me voices. "Get out of there," a man shouted. "No," said Kay in a weak, quavering voice. "You're not going anywhere, honey. I'll kill you first. Then kill me. I'll kill you. I'll cut your goddamn throat." I turned over, sat up, looked, and saw a big man, Craven, gazing down at Kay in the Porsche. Slowly he bent over, slid down a sock, and pulled out something shiny and metallic. I got to my feet, still dizzy, and went for Craven's back, hitting him hard with repeated shots to the kidneys. He was slow to react, but turned to face me with a box cutter in his hand, lunging clumsily. A boxing instinct made me jump aside, and I threw a punch against his cheek that connected as he passed. A brute, not a boxer. Stunned, he shook his head and turned and came at me, both arms extended. I waited until he closed and slammed a fist into his nose and felt cartilage give way. Unfazed, he wrapped his arms around my chest and squeezed. I peppered his back with ineffectual blows until I felt a sharp pain in my shoulder as his blade penetrated, spreading as he drew the box cutter across my back. As I contracted in agony, he released his arms and grabbed my hair, pulled back my head, and raised the box cutter to slash my throat. A sudden loud explosion. The suspended blade fell as Craven collapsed. Behind him, standing by the Porsche, stood Kay, holding my snub-nosed 38. She looked dazed. I gently took the gun from her hand and pocketed it. I called 911 on my cell, reported a shooting, and requested police and an ambulance. I touched my back. My fingers came back wet. The pain grew tangible. "Help!" I shouted at the onlookers. "We need medical help over here!" Eyes stared back, but no one moved. A wave of faintness passed over me. Later, two small Latinas were at my side, steadying me and helping me sit. One pressed a towel against my back. "You'll be okay, mister," she said. The other was squatting by Craven, lying on his back a few feet from me. He was breathing rapidly, with a red blossom on his left side slightly above his hip. The young woman pressed a towel against the bullet entry wound. Two police cruisers and a fire department ambulance arrived. I laid the pistol on the ground. Within minutes, I was lifted into the ambulance beside Craven. The paramedics put IV drips in our arm, and we hit the road. A cop in blue leaned toward me, holding my wallet. "Mr. Costa?" "That's my name," I said. "Do you know the shooting victim?" "His name is Ricky Craven. His ID says Lloyd Love. It's fake. Did you shoot him?" "No." "No more questions now," a paramedic told the cop. "Relax, Mr. Costa," the paramedic said. "We'll be there soon." Mm-hmm. That concludes episode 32 of Pilcrow and Dagger the Shorts. We hope you enjoyed Sunshine by Henry Simpson. Special thanks to Kevin McLeod at incompetech.com for letting us use his music. Happy Boy End Theme, On the Ground, Dances and Dames, Deadly Roulette, and Hot Pursuit. All of Kevin's work is licensed under Creative Commons by Attribution 3.0. All other sound effects were courtesy of freesound.org. My name is A. Marie Silver, and I'll see you next time.